we're going to go ahead and get started because the sheriff and I started talking. And I said, well, this is a good conversation. We should probably turn the mics on. And we hate to interrupt all of your conversations, but we kind of already got started. And I said, well, let's pause, take a minute, and let everybody get situated. I'm Dan Gibbons from City Club, and I just want to first start off by saying welcome. We got a great full room. So great to see so many of you again. Jose Sanchez is here from our Board of Governors. Thank you, Jose. And on behalf of the Board of Governors, we welcome you all back to City Club, especially you, Sheriff Dart. And you know how much we're dedicated to civil discourse and bringing together this incredible group of civic leaders from different sectors, and we couldn't do this without sponsorship. So it's hugely important to City Club that each of these tables and each of these memberships help us share this platform with incredible public servants like the sheriff. So thank you to Loyola University, thank you to Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council. Thank you to O'Brien family and the O'Brien restaurants, the Sargent Consulting Group, White and Company, Pat Cermak here, Cook County Justice Advisory Council, I think it's right over there, Fifth Third Bank, and Globetrotters Engineering. Please, thank you to all those sponsors. It's just as important as the folks that we bring into the room, because it all feeds off each other. This is an ecosystem of civic engagement that is here at City Club. So we're always proud of the ability to bring these right folks together, which is why it helps the speaker understand who's in the room, and it also helps you all know who you're sitting next to, who you might want to do some business with, or maybe change some policy, or get engaged and help a different nonprofit. Who knows? There's so many great things that come out of these meetings at City Club. So I'd like to always mention kind of a little bit of who's in the room, if you'll allow me a minute. We have some elected officials. We have Alderman Brian Hopkins and Alderman Sam Nugent, as well as Cook County Commissioner Sean Morrison and Clerk Mariana Spiropoulos. A couple of judges, Honorable Tom Cushing, and it's fun for me to say the Honorable Sarah McGann, a good friend who's a new judge. I believe Sheriff Noonan is here, right, from DuPage County. Sheriff, I haven't... Welcome back. And actually, let's take a moment to say hello and thank you to our law enforcement. One second here. There's a number that of you that are, you know who you are. I know who many of you are, Brian and Dan, and the former and current. Some are at Navy Pier right now. Some are in the transit agency. Some are at the sheriff's office. Could I just ask anyone who is a current or former law enforcement official to stand up for a moment and let us say thank you to you. Thank you. On behalf of City Club and the civic community of Chicago, we know all that goes into what you've done, what you're doing, and all of the work that you do to keep this city safe, and it's very, very much appreciated. Thank you for that. Thank you. A few more folks I want to mention. We've got the Inspector General is here, Deb Witzberg. Perry Ermer from the DuSable Museum is here. Jack Lavin from the Chamber of Commerce. Thank you, Jack. Loyola's Dean of the School of Law, where the sheriff graduated from. Michelle Alexandre. If I didn't recognize you, raise your hand. No, just David Kennedy. Great former public servant, I guess, recovering public servant. Dwayne Deskins is here. Tim Egan from Roseland Hospital. Ajay Shaw from Globetrotters. I mentioned Brian Murphy and Dan O'Shea from Navy Pier. We appreciate when you all come together. I see Rich Daniels. I mean, it's just an incredible group of people. Kevin Flood. These are the folks that make things happen in Chicago, and it's always great to not only hear what we're going to talk about up on the stage here, but also have these conversations before, hopefully not during, but before and after the conversation. So thank you for being here. It's very meaningful. I'm going to get right into this and sit down with the sheriff. So I'm going to make sure this mic works. That back? How we doing? I should probably turn it on. We're very casual here at City Club. Okay. So, the man doesn't need all that much of an introduction because I think he's very well known by everyone in this room. He's been the sheriff since
1804.
1804. And as many of you know, before that, he was in the state legislature. He's been a public servant really since I can actually remember. And it's an honor just to have him back at City Club. I was going to say an annual, but I think it's been 2 years since you've been here.
Could be, yeah.
With quite a bit in those 2 years happening. So
no, nothing. It's been really boring in the world.
Well, hey, please welcome back Sheriff Tom Darr. We'll get right to it.
Thank you. Thanks, Sheriff.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks so much. So we have so many things, and I also encourage you all to think of some questions. I'll try not to dominate the question asking, but I do have a number of things that I'd like to get into and some topics. And then the sheriff is also, knowing what you know, some of the broad topics, has a few videos that will run to it at some point or another. And feel free to interrupt me anytime if we're sort of on a topic that you want to show a specific example of something, because I think those are going to be some neat visuals that really help explain what you're up to. And it's so much.
Yes,
so,
be busy.
Where do we start? I think in the last 2 years, I specifically have seen this, and I think it's really interesting how you've broadened your purview and taken it upon your office and yourself to do some innovative things that aren't necessarily what the job description has set out. What have you been up to, and what is some of the
sounds like sounds like my dad. What have you been up to?
Yeah, what have you been doing?
Yeah, what are you up to?
Where were you?
It's interesting because the sheriff's office, I love it. I've been doing it for a year or two now. I had an amazing predecessor. I started this thing in 2006, and it was in the course of the housing crisis in 2008 that I had reason to really research what the sheriff's office was about. And I found out that the mandate is incredibly broad. The reason I had to find out was at the time I was not evicting people. I was put a moratorium on it. I was being sued, and there was a strong likelihood that I was going to get locked up. And at the time, having five young kids, I figured I'd better find out what I am getting into here. And so in looking at the statute's wildly broad. And so for someone like me, it's been a, sort of a dream job because it just you're somewhat limited by your creativity. Now, mind you, that doesn't mean I'm going to go wandering off into all sorts of directions. We're clearly a normal person without any agenda would say, Tom, you're really outside where you should be. But within the purview of the office, it allows me to really be creative in approaching problems, many of which have been around forever, some that are new variations of it. And so it's allowed me to approach things differently. And the one thing I just wanted to start off on, because I figured you folks might find this interesting, and particularly because it just occurred down the street like 4 or 5 days ago. We have an amazing police department. I have amazing employees. You've heard about some of them. Unfortunately, like in most big organizations, frequently the only time you hear about employees is when they've done something bad. I have just amazing people that work with me. We do all the patrolling in the police function in a town called Ford Heights, far south suburbs. It's one of the poorest towns in the United States. It's been that way forever. When I was looking at the data one day, because I was curious about some of the numbers, because I'm really a data sort of freak, I was looking at it and I saw all these different traffic stops we were doing. And in addition to traffic stops, I saw that we were writing tickets, giving out a fair share of warnings, don't get me wrong, but we were giving out tickets for people whose cars had headlights out, who taillights were out, other vehicle-related things.
Now you sound like my dad. Always made me check the taillight.
Oh, yeah, please, absolutely. And I looked at it and I said to myself, this is wildly illogical and close to thoughtless. Here I have one of the poorest towns in the United States. You would imagine the vehicles in that town are going to have lots of different issues, and yet what are we doing to advance our society? We're giving them more of a burden. We're giving them tickets, court dates that are wildly expensive. and that's somehow making things better. No. So I looked around the country, couldn't find anything. So we dreamed up this program where when we were pulling people over for violations because of their vehicle, instead of ticketing them, we would give them a card inviting them to a free event that I would throw 7 or 8 times a year where I would change their and fix their lights and their cars for free. I started a non-for-profit years ago. I take the money from that non-for-profit. I buy the light bulbs. People go online. They tell us what type of car they have, so we have the right light bulbs. They show up on the date and time, and they just queue up. And my vehicle people, for that, you know, 4 hours of that day, they're working on their cars. And it's just been tremendous. We've done this, I don't know how many cars we've hit so far. It's almost 1,000. And the response from the folks we interact with have been just what I would hope it would be. They're just wildly thankful. They're surprised as heck. At first, we had a little bit of a problem with attendance because people thought this was one of my scams where I was trying to arrest everyone. And so once we got through that and we got people to understand, no, this is the real deal, people started coming out in large numbers. And we were able to do that then. And the stories, because I'd go to some of them, the stories I'd hear were absolutely amazing. And this one woman, I'll never forget, she was telling me how she's had her car sitting in her driveway for 3 or 4 months. She gave me the bus routes that she had to take to get to work every day. It was torturous just listening to the extent she went to. And yet she couldn't use her car because she knew if she got pulled over for a broken taillight, the ticket was, she gave me the amount, the ticket was going to be this, the court expenses were going to be this, but she couldn't afford to fix it. And it was like, this is not what a thoughtful society does. And so we started that. We've had a great deal of success. We continue that and other iterations of it. But we have this one video from, it was right down the street, and you'll find this sort of funny.
How are you doing tonight?
Good, yourself? I just didn't know the headlight was out. Like, didn't know.
Oh, you know what? I
didn't know that the headlight was out.
I got a card for you.
A card?
Yeah.
He's got one.
Yeah.
What for?
See, your headlight
fixed
for free.
Really? Oh my God! Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And think about that, folks, for a second, too. One of the things that us in law enforcement are talking about all the time is, you know, how is it we can connect with the community, get them to really feel that we're all in this thing together and that we're here to help each other and we're not just here to arrest everyone, take kids up. It's things like this. And you can tell by the response from this woman, but it's been with most of the people we approach. It's that same sense of surprise. It's like, wow, we didn't know you guys did that. And it was like, well, there's nothing that made me not do it. So it's like until someone tells me not to do it, and I'll ignore them anyways, or if I get sued, and I'll somewhat ignore that as well, we'll just continue to go ahead and do that. So it was like when you're looking at some of the ways that we operate in our office, it's with that notion. It's like, let's try to get some of these intractable problems, try to come up with new ways to go at them. And, you know, I find it to be wildly enjoyable, and it's something that's also something, oh, Mr. Cermak is always doing this, honest to God. Oh, God. Oh, yeah. Mark, don't bite him next time. He just threw me off completely. I have no idea where I'm going now. But yeah, so I mean, that's really what we're sort of like at here. And so we apply basically that same mindset to all these other issues as well.
Yeah, you're not just, I mean, historically, you're locking people up and managing jails and evicting people, right?
Yeah, and people, I think there's a widespread agreement. We can't arrest our way out of these problems. It's insane. There's no scenario where that will ever work. You know, evictions, you know, yeah, people need to pay the rent and mortgage. I get all that. But there's other ways to do these things where you're actually working with people to try to get them in better places. It doesn't mean just because you're in charge of evictions, you just got to throw people in the street. It's like, no, we can actually go out ahead of time, interact with people, find out what the issues are, and then even though they most likely are going to have to leave that situation, we can help them find housing and things like that. It's like, well, nothing stops us from doing that. So it's really looking at those problems and saying, what would a thoughtful society do? And then see if we can manage to do that. And I've had, you know, and Sean's here, I've had just wild support from the county board on a lot of these things. They've been great. It's never been, oh, the county board says, no. They've been fantastic to work with.
Again, it's out of the purview. It's out of, I imagine other cities or other counties, other cities looking at what you're doing?
Not as much as you'd think, because the law enforcement world is bizarre in the sense that it's always been a place where there's so little data, which I always found astounding, because if you think about it, as any society, other than executing someone, the next most significant thing you can do is to incarcerate them. And yet, in the law enforcement world, the data is just, you'd be astounded to see what the data is around the country. When we're looking at things, because I'm always trying to compare to other jurisdictions to see, are we great? Are we middle? Are we awful? I won't know unless I'm comparing it to something, not just myself. good luck getting this information. It's so hard. And so that's like when some of these other problems have popped up that we've been engaged with. I would so love to do what I did when I was in the legislature, which is go to another jurisdiction, steal their idea, say it was mine, lie through my teeth, and then, you know, it's like, brilliant, this one's great. And it's like, oh, Colorado's been doing it for 5 years, but you didn't know that. But there is really no sources like this in the law enforcement world.
And I must have missed the press release on that program, because, or is it something that you're doing? I mean, it sounds like you're doing these things. There's so much more happening that we even know about.
We do, and we send out press releases. And trust me, the media, I have great relationships with most of them, and it's a different world for them now. But the old days aren't that long ago, like 10, 15 years ago, you used to be able to put press releases out, press conferences, and you get a lot of attention. Now with these damn phones and people getting all their information off of social media, it's, you know, you're now trying to figure out other platforms to get this stuff out. So a lot of these things, we will do press conferences, press releases, but it just gets sort of washed away with the world that we're in now, where people are on their phones listening to just what they want to hear because it's reinforcing whatever their views are, and that we get lost in that sometimes.
The world we're in now is a little bit more intense than it was when we were here 2 years ago.
Oh, my God.
You seem to be right at the center of all of that.
Yeah, it really is. And so it's really trying to maneuver through some of this stuff and let the people who want to yell and scream on both sides, let them do that. And we just keep talking about our office. We're just going to keep doing our job. We're going to innovate. We're going to keep going there. Let them do their things, and that's fine. But we got stuff to do. And it's one of the things that I often tell people, one of the issues that is been probably the number one issue vexing people in law enforcement has been this bizarre type of feeling that when there's a mental health issue at a home that they need to have doctors, not police, there. And I can tell you, I've never met someone in law enforcement who signed up to be a police officer because they wanted to be a mental health professional. No, they wanted to be a police officer. But we have this situation where this has been going on forever and will go on. And the point I was trying to make is that while people are, you know, yelling, screaming about, hey, this, you know, you need to have this, like, you guys do that. In the meantime, though, we came up with something that's really cool where when we get mental health calls, which is over half of our calls, when we get those, and that's the same for most law enforcement agencies, when we get those, our officers go to the house, because they've been called to go to the house, but they go there with a tablet. And the last time I was here, or whatever year, was the Crown Foundation was so wildly helpful. They gave us 100 of them, over 100 of them. But our officers go to the house with tablets and immediately, 24/7, can dial up a mental health professional, hand the tablet off to the person either in crisis or frequently it's their mother or father, sister or brother, and they'll sit with them. And so they're talking live time to a mental health professional about their issues. We have, and we're going to show you some video footage in a second, but the point I'm trying to get at is while everyone's sitting there talking about, you know, this and that, and we need to get doctors and nurses there, it's like, please, if you can figure out a conceivable way where fiscally you can do that, I am all ears. But in the meantime, I really want to help real people today, because you know what? They deserve it. And these folks are in crisis. By the time they've called us, law enforcement, the stories these poor families have gone through, they adore this sibling, they adore this brother or sister, and they've gone through things we can never imagine, keeping it at home, when they're on their meds, off their meds, and lost their job. They're the last lifeline they have. So for them calling us, it's not something they're doing because, you know, someone didn't put the dishes away properly. It's like really bad. And so they deserve a serious society that's going to help them now. Not with these aspirational things that I keep hearing about. Well, we're going to send an ambulance over there, and they're going to handle this call. It's like, are you kidding me? You show me where that's worked. And I said, listen, if you can get it to work, I'm on board. We'll dump our tablets in the Chicago River. I'm not going to feel like, oh, you've proved me wrong. I'm wrong all the time. Talk to my children. They'll tell you that. But in the real world is we have to help people today. And so the video I'm going to show you in a second is just an average one. This happens to us all the time. It took a little bit, and I mean a little bit, for our officers to buy in because it was a new concept. But so when they go to the house for a mental health call, they immediately are looking for that tablet. And that tablet comes out, and I cannot tell you how many body-worn camera footage, things I've watched, where here you have this person in horrible crisis talking to a mental health professional on the tablet as they're walking into an ambulance. There's no handcuffs. There's no one had to go down on the ground. There's no one throwing things. It's just like, it's, you know, another case you'll never hear about. And you're not supposed to. I'm not blaming anybody. You're not supposed to hear about these ones. But that becomes our norm then. And then the person that we're working with, they stay on our caseload. So it's not like, oh, we're done with them now. It's like, no. We have a mental health professional you're connected to now. So on an average month when you're having a crisis, just call us. There's no need to call 911. We'll handle it. And we just do that all the time. But my frustration is when people are just so busy yelling about all their brilliant answers. There's these things called real people, who need our help right now, and they're not getting it because you are so concerned that your issue is not going to be, you know, the one that they're going to say, because you're perfect. It's like, oh, give me a break. And it's just one of those things that frustrates me to no end, because I tell you, these folks deserve it, and they deserve better. Instead, they have people that are wedded to their own ideas that have not been able to work, and these are the results. So if we can play that video real quick.
On this side, you're okay. I know you're okay. I'm okay, too. You love your family a lot. I could tell that you do.
Yeah.
I love the family. Hey, I feel you, brother. My man, I need you to give me a hug. My man, I need you to give me a hug. My name, I love you. And in this minute right now, this is what matters. Come on.
There you go.
Perfect.
Just have a seat, man.
It's going to be okay, man.
You're all right. You're okay. You're okay, man.
And so we have that. We may or may not have this other video.
That's a life. That's a family.
Oh, please. I talked to that officer the next day, and he was so nonchalant about it. I was like, you understand what you did? That's, like, amazing. And he was like, well, you know, Sheriff, that's what he walked me through the training that we gave him. And I take the training, too, but I sometimes wonder what training's sticking or not. And he said, no, Sheriff, the de-escalation thing that you have us do, he goes, that stuff is the best. And he goes, that's what I used. And it was like, God, that's great, every once in a while. But we also, I don't know if we had a video, we had one where we had someone looking at a tablet. Do we have that one? Okay, we didn't bring that one with us, but we have one that even more clearly just shows you the tablet being utilized in a really chaotic situation that normally would go south in a hurry that didn't. And so it's one of these things where for like the common thread running through this office is this notion, okay, this problem's not intractable. What can we do to make it better? Not perfect, make it better.
From a human perspective, and you're such a data-driven guy, I know that, just from...
For a guy with a flip phone.
Is that why you don't text back?
Correct.
Mental health is something we talk about a lot here at City Club. I'm glad you got into that. And it does seem like a lot of the crime in Chicago and the area, a lot more than usual, is related to mental health or how society has treated folks who have mental health issues. Does the data show that? I think I'm getting a little into it a little bit deeper, but is that something? Is that a perception? Is that
no? It's put it this way. There's particularly because we do more work downtown Chicago than we've ever done before. And my folks have been fantastic. And so we sort of see it firsthand. A lot of the crime is directed toward, like, the businesses. That's different, but different in this sense of the word. Much more organized, much more connected to people who are... not necessarily in the traditional sense of gangs, but organized people who, my God, I've seen some of the ways they have had this stuff organized. So, like, a lot of that crime, the smash and grabs, the retail theft, we have lots of people who are doing retail theft where they literally walk in with a list of the things that they're told to get, and the sizes, the colors, and things like that. So it's very organized in that sense. But as far as, like, the mental health component, the problem that we see all too often and does not seem to go away is the revolving door. And it's not unique to Illinois at all. It's around the country. The mental health system is so broken in this sense. The providers truly are not funded the way they should. Under anyone's estimation, that's the case. But then the laws are not what you would think they are. The laws still are with this notion that we do not want to in any way infringe upon individual rights of people. And so you have cases constantly where someone is clearly, clearly suffering from a mental illness, and yet they are taken into custody because they committed a criminal event, and then they're brought in and they're back out in the street pretty quickly. We have these intervention programs that we set up years ago at the jail. Where those somewhat fail is that, and trust me, I'm not in any way blaming the bond system, anything like that, but where they fail is in the past, we were holding so many people we shouldn't have been holding for minor offenses, but when we had them, we were putting them in all these programs, and we were really seeing a lot of traction, a lot of things going on. Now people are coming in and out so quickly. We're trying to do things on the fly to address that mental health issue. They're only with us for hours, and they're gone. And so you're probably seeing a little bit more that than the past, but it's been a historic number that's a bad number because society-wise, we don't believe in holding people who have a mental illness involuntarily. It just doesn't happen. Are there some laws to allow it? Yeah. Are they used? No, they're not used. They're not used. And they're very difficult to use at times, but they're not being used. So the mental health part of it has been more of a consistent thing. As far as the crime goes, particularly down here, we have this new organized element that's very problematic that we've addressed, not addressed, we've been working on it. And once again, sort of a data-driven way. I have this unit that's down here that's civilian and sworn but not police, and they go from business to business talking to the businesses about what their security issues are. We work with them on that, upping their security issues. But then it was one of these things where, and I think some of it came from the fact I used to be a state's attorney a million years ago. Myself and everybody else back then treated retail theft, it was a joke. You know, it was like, hey, we got all these shootings, we don't have time for this stuff. Now people are getting it, that it is destroying businesses, businesses are leaving, and we got to get serious about it. So with us, we started by going to the businesses, finding out what their issues were, then making sure our policing was directed by data, showing where people are hitting, what time of day they're hitting things, what they're hitting, and then working our way up into some of these organized places. But the other part of it, too, which was trying, you know, I met with a lot of the business community, and there was this real need on our part to fess up and say, we have not been operating the way we should, and we owe it to you. And so it was
we as law enforcement in general. Not
yeah, we just weren't appreciating what this was really doing. And in doing that, to say to them, listen, we're going to up our game. And one of the things, too, when I was talking to them, and it made sense to me as a former prosecutor, they were either not getting proper notification on their court dates, and so the case would get thrown out, or they would actually go to the court date and the case would get thrown out. Either way, they were sitting there saying, why am I going through this? Because they're very concerned about lawsuits. So if they grab somebody who's stealing from them, their corporate entities are telling them, don't touch anybody, don't arrest anything. So the amount of times we've had to meet with major companies to tell you, please, work with us on this. You got to stop people, because if you don't, you become a magnet for people from all over to hit your store, because they all know you're not prosecuting, and then they're going to hit all the other stores around you too. So there was a lot of fence mending there that we had to do, and we're not there completely yet, but it's very organized on our part now in working with these entities. But it was really something where we had to get down to really pulling it apart. Where's it failing? And it was failing on all these different levels for people, and it's still frustrating. When I have my police down here and I have my civilians down here, I also have like a mental health unit that just walks up and down Michigan Avenue, Wacker Drive, and stuff like that. And we've had a great deal of luck in our world getting people who will agree to go into like a program, which is tough when you're talking to someone on the street saying, will you come with me right now for an inpatient program? And we've had success there. It's not on the magnitude you'd want, but you've got to just keep going at that stuff.
And I appreciate connecting some of those dots, because I asked that because I think some of the perception is that mental health, that crime by folks you know that have mental health issues is on the rise. I think we're just recognizing that now.
Yeah.
And I appreciate what you're doing to try to get ahead of that and not just traditionally go and you know lock those folks up
It always was a failure on our part collectively around the country is that I mean, how illogical is it that when you have someone come into your custody who has a mental health issue and you're not going at that issue and then connecting them to the community when they leave, what do you think is going to happen? It's like so dumb, so dumb. But that around the country is what the norm is because, you know, the sheriffs and the prisons, they look at, well, my job's done now. It's like your job's really just started if you want this thing to hook. Because a lot of the folks get in our programs in the jail and they're really in it and they're really connected to it. It gets tricky when they're on the outside. Our biggest issue is we case manage people when they leave, even though they're not in my custody anymore. We continue to case manage them, which people think is bizarre, but I think it's bizarre not to. We do that. Our biggest failure is that we lose track of them because they lose their cell phone service. And so we can't call them anymore. It's not because they said, I don't want to work with you anymore. I don't want to go to the appointments. It's they can't get a hold of us and we can't get a hold of them. And that frustrates me because I keep thinking there's a solution to that and I haven't found it yet.
Maybe there's some ideas in the room.
Yeah, I'm open to ideas.
That's what we love to see progress, and it's great to hear the progress you've made. How about, all right, well, let's step into a little further into like the hardened organized criminals that are out there. You know, we have a new state's attorney, we have a new police superintendent in Chicago since you have been here.
I've had a lot of new ones since I've been here.
Since you have been here at City Club the last, I think there have only maybe two or three.
Since the last time, yeah.
Numbers are going down.
Yeah.
A lot of that, we're two or three years into some of these initiatives that you took on here at, right here, like you said, at Clark and River North. And now you're doing the same thing over at Roosevelt and State or something similar. Is that right?
Yeah. We now have, right, we're present, we have four offices open in this area. And it was all driven by the numbers, and it was driven by the crime numbers, it was driven by the need. We have one at 500 North Clark. Jimmy Leschinger, amazing man. He gave us a floor, pretty much the whole floor. He built it out at One Chicago. That's where we run our carjacking operation out of. We're in Water Tower Place for the time being until they come up with their new iteration there. And that's been helpful because we're very visible there. And we just opened up Roosevelt and State, basically, right under the L tracks there. And so we have a lot of presence there, and as a result of it, just since 2022, we've made 20, just my officers, we've made 2,500 arrests, and we've taken just under 250 guns off the street from just down here. So we've been, you know, busy, and so it plays out that's why we were needed down here.
And would you say, do you have numbers? I don't know if you have more, the smash and grabs, a lot of that that's going on.
We still
see them, but is it better?
It's tough. It is tough. We all, collectively, all of us, we have a lot more to do. We absolutely do. But just in the last, like, 18 months, we've made just retail theft stuff. We've made almost 600 felony arrests, and we've recovered over $6 million in merchandise. And so the numbers are real, but as I say, we have a lot more to do. And it's been, as I say, it's been at times frustrating. I get way into the weeds sometimes. There's one of the businesses around here where it's just been frustrating to me because they're not, their corporate people don't let them engage in stopping people. And so that sort of encourages more theft and things like that. And so we're trying to come up with cameras and LPRs that might be able to help us in place of that. So
are you doing this? Are you coordinating with the Chicago Police Department, with the private, the McMile? Or is this your own? How does that work jurisdictionally?
Jurisdictionally, I can go anywhere in the county, unannounced, uninvited, whatever I want to do. Down here, we work very closely with not just Chicago Police Department, but also with the different MAG-MILE Society. All of them. I mean, they've been great to work with out at Navy Pier. It's just been really, really, really good partnerships and really thoughtful ones. And so we've been able to work somewhat seamlessly with that. And it's played itself out in the retail theft thing, but particularly in the carjacking world. That was something where when the carjacking has exploded, about like 3 years ago, I think it was, City of Chicago was the worst in the country. We couldn't find anywhere in the world where there was more carjackings than in the City of Chicago. And I often tell people, if you took L.A., New York City, and Philadelphia and added them all together, we were still more than them all. and it was that bad.
I remember getting into my car and having something handy, just not knowing I had the kids, and it was really bad.
It was, and we're not out of the woods yet, but collectively, we came together with all these other entities. We put together this sort of task force where we became like the central data hub, where we brought all this data together because we knew this was going on, but we needed to find out where it was going on, when it was going on, were there patterns about how things were going, things like that. And so collectively, all of us started really working close together. It was us, Chicago, FBI, state police, a range of people, Homeland Security. We had a range of people coming together, and it was wildly helpful. We've like gone from, I think it was like 2,100 carjackings down to like...
Might mean there's a video, or... Oh, there you go.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's just consistently dropped since we do it. And we took it...
This is the actual...
The number of carjackings.
Carjackings per year.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where we... So we brought everyone together. We did this thing where it was with data-driven, and it's really... We have this data center over in One Chicago now where everything will flow into there. The biggest problem we were having originally was the manufacturers were not tracing the vehicles. And so I can't tell you how many cases where Chicago or us were standing next to someone who just had a gun put to their head and their car taken, and we're on the phone literally with the manufacturer of that vehicle, and they're saying, well, no, we won't trace the vehicle because that person needs to sign a form. It's like, well, they just had a gun to their head, so it's a little tricky right now. We might not be able to get that. And they didn't care. The vast majority would not track cars. Senator Durbin was great. He had me come down to Washington. I testified in front of the Judiciary Committee on the need to change that. You know, with Washington, you know, didn't get a lot done. We then introduced a bill in Springfield to mandate if you are selling cars in the state, you have to track vehicles. Now we get 100% tracking, and that is such a huge part of this. The helicopters, you know, Chicago has three new ones. We got one.
Did you get one for the, or was it around the convention time? I think
ours just came in, I think, about a month ago. And it's been wildly active already. We knew it would be. Combining all of these things together, we've driven the numbers down so much. Once again, more work to do, but not like you said, nothing like what it was back then. And that was this combined effort using data, but then going outside the box and going, hey, let's go down to Springfield and really make it very difficult for the manufacturers to say no. And now they're on board, they track the vehicles, and we're between that and the helicopters, we're recovering vehicles at an amazing clip now. The amount of time vehicles used to be missing were, oh my God, it was crazy how long they were going. Now we're getting within hours. And that prevents another crime from being committed, because many of the times they were doing the carjackings, it was so they can use a car that's not attached to them to do a drive-by.
Really?
So it's got...
Or a smash and grab.
Yeah,
or
all these tentacles attached to it. And so it was really a question of just trying to figure out, outside the box, how can we approach this? Because just flooding the area was going to make no difference whatsoever. So it was, you know, that's really just somewhat the common thread that we do with all this stuff. I don't know if I had I don't have any video on that one. But, you know, we're proud, but as I said, long way to go on, you know, being able to.
Could we go back to it for a minute to the, like, you're talking about how the organized crime, because again, we have a lot of business owners, we've got folks here that understand, especially in this exact area. You talk about how organized that is, and you're putting numbers to it, millions and millions of dollars. I mean, that's business. Those are real numbers. These aren't just kids from the street, although sometimes, I don't know, I guess I'm going to ask, could you walk us through, where does it go from a kid on the street? How high up have you been able to figure out where that gets connected, and how organized is it?
It's so organized, and I tell you,
who is it?
It's just a range of people. It's not like your traditional gang structure, you know, where someone say, well, this is the GDs, and there's a little bit of that going on. There is. But mostly it's people who have put this structure together that functions much like a gang, where they're going to be the hub of it. So all the stuff, like in the old days, that'd be like the fencer. And they have these people that are going out with literally lists of things to take. And the volume they were taking was incredible. And then there'd be some that would be more like the direct smash and grab. But the other ones were more just this thing where it was massive amounts. So they would get frequently younger people. They would sign on. They would go into, say, Lululemon. And they would just grab 20 or 30 items, and out the door they would go. There'd be a car waiting out there. They'd be gone. And then they'd go to this guy. He'd pay them a fraction of it, and then he would be either have it. Usually he'd have it, like, on one of these sites and be selling it online. Sometimes, though, they actually had storefronts that we were able to get into. And I think we had two of those we got
all into. Locally? I mean, are they going out?
One was here. We had a couple out in the far, in the next county over, two counties over, I think it was. And we were able to track those down. They're also really engaged with the hitting the boxcars, more so than ever before, where at times they have some inside information. They know that certain boxcars have certain things in them. Other times they're just walking right down the line and opening boxcars, and off they go. And then that all goes to usually a central source that then they're selling all this. So it's just a different world. I can't say enough yet, because I saw it from the old days when it was usually one-offs, two-offs, things like that. This is very different now. And, you know, as I say, we have partnerships we've made with these different folks to address this one, and they're real partnerships. You know, Rob Carr with the Retail Merchants has been awesome. He's been helping us get into some of the businesses that we aren't working as closely as we'd want. But it's wildly organized. Wildly organized.
I think I'm also hearing that it's more organized on your end of things now with...
Oh, yeah.
With willing partners. Has that really been significant with
this
department, with the state's attorney, new state's attorney?
That's all been...
There used to be a lot of finger-pointing, right?
Yeah, it's really
the courts,
not the case
the judges,
anymore.
It's really not the case anymore.
Really not the case anymore, and we're actually working really closely with the railroads now, too, and that's been really helpful. I just can't emphasize enough to you, the business community has just gotten kicked in the teeth. I mean, and a lot of us were late on the uptake on that one, but we're getting it now. But we've got a lot more work to do. So, and some of them are just fantastic. We had, I think it was Nike at first, they were not terribly engaged, and then they were having some of their stores looted, and then wow, did they up their game to where now they go around and put classes on for people. And there's these tracking devices they can put inside clothing at different levels. It's just, some of it's fantastic.
Imagine technology is going to be helpful.
Oh, my God. When we one of the storefronts we went into, they have a device, and I have no idea what to call it, but it's something where it's like literally in one of the person's pockets. They were able to go into the physical building, and with the thing in their pocket, they were able to see that their items were in the store. So they knew the stolen items were in there. And then we were able to get a search warrant, and I mean, we found just tons of it. But it was like immediately they were able to do this through technology.
Okay, so you mentioned we have some work to do. There's always going to be work to do. We talked here at City Club, and Roe and a couple of your deputies were here. We had a couple of conversations specifically on transit. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, you hear about the cliff and the funding needs and all of that, but safety on public transit in particular is something that I think there's a lot of work to be done. Again, there's a recurring theme here. Historically, not your job, not my job. Okay, you know, that's somebody else.
Yeah.
Are you making it your job? I heard.
Well, yeah. So the legislature asked, when they were having their discussions in April and May, they reached out to us and asked us if we'd help. Most of my staff thought I was insane. There might be a case to be made at times. But taking on, and what we agreed though was we would help come together with a plan. It wasn't like I was going to take over and I'm going to run all this. No. I neither have the resources or the time to do that. But to put together a thoughtful plan that addressed the different issues you had, because it's a pretty bifurcated system right now where different entities have their own policing entities and some talk more to others than others do.
And some probably reach outside of Cook County, right?
They do, their resource level is not great in these areas. So it really was quite what we took on the task of bringing together all of the data once again and then try to see if there's a way to come up with a more coherent plan that makes more sense than having just these separate entities all over, maybe talking, maybe not talking. And so we have the outlines of something together now, and that's what I promised the legislature we'd do. And we're adding a little bit more to it, but it was a learning curve for me because I didn't know anything about this. But it was something where they asked us to do it. We were you know, we're always busy, but it was like something where they really felt, to your point, that if they were going to fund this transit, they want to make sure that they weren't leaving off something that really hovers around people's decisions to use transit. Do you feel safe or not? Is it clean? And so I think part of the fact that we do so much of like policing and mental health and things like that, I think led them to us because that's where we operate pretty effectively.
I wasn't planning on getting into this, but so there's a problem right there. Now there's the threat of the National Guard coming to Chicago. And there is a very incredible united front of civic leaders, political leaders, elected officials, law enforcement, everybody saying, business leaders, don't come here. We don't need this. Just from what I'm hearing a little more recently, people say, well, maybe there is a way. Maybe there's a reason. Maybe there could be some. And I think at one point someone said, well, what if you had, if they were here and they were forced to be here, put them on public transit. I don't know if that was your idea. I don't know if you had any insight into that. But could you talk for a minute about what – it's a big issue, obviously. Everybody's talking about it around the country. Should we be having the National Guard here? They're forced on us. What
we need is serious people here, serious people who are sincere. I've been doing this for a while. I love what I'm doing, but I really don't have time for morons. I just don't. Like, if you're serious about crime and those issues, you first, every jurisdiction is unique. As I was just saying, we were different than on carjacking there. If you're serious, you go to that jurisdiction, bring the leaders together and say, what do you need so we can help here? None of those conversations have ever happened, and they never will. We know that. There's real things that we need help with. I mean, my God, if you could see what our average day is like dealing with the South Suburbs right now. We have one police department where we do their third shift and most of their second shift like every day. But it's not like scheduled. It's not planned. So we just get a phone call and say, hey, you know, Tom, can you rearrange your entire strategy for the day and help us here? And we'll do that. They have, I think this police department has, I think, one or maybe two functioning police cars in the entire town. Entire town. Another town that I have out in the South Suburbs, for I think it was a week, I had one of the more bizarre calls I've had in a while, because I get the calls all the time about, can you help us with the third shift, second shift, that stuff. I get that, and it's not easy. But they called us and said, can you help us because we don't have any cars? And I was like, okay, so you can't get your guys on the street, you're shipped? And he goes, no, we don't have the cars. I go, we'll send you people. He goes, no, you're not listening, Sheriff. We don't have any cars. I go, what do you mean? He goes,
you got a pocket tail full of taillights.
Oh, yeah, I got the taillights. I got no car.
A screwdriver.
They had not paid their insurance for a period of time. And so all their cars were gone. They didn't have any physical vehicles. And we saw it play out because we had to basically take over the policing function for a bit. And there was multiple times where our officers said, you know, Sheriff, this was really weird. But we were at a house dealing with a case, whatever it was, domestic case, whatever it might be. And then all of a sudden, here comes two of their officers running down the street, physically running down the street because they have no vehicle. And so we have real needs, and until we have zero murders and zero shootings, we need help. We need help. Until we have zero, we need help. There's no acceptable level of shootings or murders. There's none. Zero is the acceptable level. But there's real things that serious people would do if they want to help. And this isn't tricky. I literally have a list here that can tell you that I need three cars for this department. I need four for this. I need radios for this one. We have one where their local holding cell, their jail, has been condemned. It's closed. They can't use it. So, I mean, but none of that, we know, we're never going to get those phone calls. So if you're serious about it and sincere, I am wildly happy to work with you to do the things that will make things, our community safer. If this is a political stunt, which we know, I'm not interested. I'm really too busy to deal with idiots. It's like, no. We can use help, but you know what the help is we need. And our federal partners that we've had partnerships with for decades with me, they know that. They're good people. And they know what our needs are, and they know what we don't need. But, you know, you get into this political world where that's why in our office we keep saying, okay, they're going to play their nonsensical games. It's not helpful. we're just going to keep going in this direction and keep helping people and keep moving the ball forward, because there's like so much to do. There's so much to do. When I sort of stumbled into it a little bit, and just to show you how much there is to do and the insanity that's sort of baked into this place, the criminal justice world, I stumbled into the fact that when, and this was like in 2013, when you have your FOID card, so your ability to have a weapon, when you have it revoked, there's a list of reasons you get it revoked. Your felony conviction, domestic violence case, there's a litany of things. Mental health is the big one. Okay, the way the system was set up forever was is that the state police would send you a letter in the mail. And then if you did not send your FOID card back in, they would send you another letter. And if you didn't send it in, you'd get that third letter. And boy, oh boy, you might get that fourth one, that fifth one. And then you're really going to get trouble. You're going to get the eighth one and the ninth one's coming. And then it's going to get really crazy once you're into it. It was insanity. It was insanity. Absolute insanity.
The Postal Service
And I wasn't concerned as much about the cards. I was, I guess, because that's how you purchase things. But the reality was is virtually, not everyone, virtually everyone who had those cards had guns. And so these were people that we know should not have a gun anywhere near them. And yet we were happy to do it. So I put a unit together back in 2013, and we started going out to the houses in my jurisdiction to get the card back and then to inquire if they had guns and then take the guns away from them. It was shortly after that, and I'm trying to remember what year it was in, where they had that horrible shooting out in Aurora at the Pratt place. That guy had had his FOID card revoked. He had no business being anywhere near a gun. But no one had ever gone to his house. No one had gone to get his guns. And he killed all these people. And so it was like then people woke up that we got to do something about this. And I said, well, luck would have it. I've had a unit that their sole purpose is they go to the door, they tell people, you got to give us your guns. So we've been doing this for years now, and we have taken, we take about a little under 500 guns a year. We close out about 2,500 cases a year, meaning that we get their cards from them. We make sure there's no guns in the house. I went to Springfield and had the law changed to give us more ability to go in the house if they wouldn't let us in. And we've been doing it. But we're only one of like 20 entities in the entire state of Illinois that's doing this. And so we have this chart that shows you that at the rate we're going now, the rate we're taking it, we're not going down as far as the number of houses and guns that are going to be in people's houses that they have no business getting them. We're going up. And there's no end in sight. And so this is one of those things where, you know, clearly everyone should be able to come together and say, listen, someone who has a mental illness, someone who has a felony conviction, we should be dealing with this. And we're not. We're not. In all of my jurisdictions, so like in unincorporated Cook County, Ford Heights, there's no one with a gun or a Ford card. We do that immediately. But because these other entities don't have any resources, once again, if we're serious about crime, the entire towns, they've never gone to the door to get guns. But and we know where that person lives. We have the address. And so we've been going into some of those towns. But even with us doing all that and having a dedicated unit, it's time-consuming. It can be difficult. And so and then everyone sits there and, you know, rubs their hands together and says, I wonder how this happened. Like, what do you mean you wonder how it happened? Everyone knew we had a mental illness, and no one went and got the guns away from them. We've had family members come to us and say, thank God you're here. We love her to death, but she wouldn't give up her guns. You guys can take them, and we'll take the guns. But it's just been so. We have a video, I think, of like our guys going out and doing.
Hello. Is it home? Are you?
Yes.
Hey, we're here by your FOID card.
Okay.
We got revoked by the state, and I need to collect your card from you.
Right, leave me home.
It says here, you got arrested?
Yes.
Yeah. So just based off of your arrest, they revoked your FOID card.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Well, yeah, actually, it's suspended. So it's suspended until your case is over. As long as you don't take a felony conviction, you can get it back. But for right now, it's suspended. So that would be the other thing. We would hold on to them. We'd document them off. We'd leave you all the paperwork, and then once you get reinstated, you would pick them up from our headquarters in Maywood.
Jeez, Maywood.
That's where our headquarters is.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
I didn't want to.
They're right here on the table. I ain't
gonna
break.
No. Is it okay if we stop then?
Yeah.
Are you sure? Okay. Thank you.
Oh. Everything's
okay. Do you have a lighter?
No.
Okay. What's a good phone number for? that one, please. Thanks. Take care.
So those are we're doing those every day. As I said, you look at these numbers. In the state of Illinois right now, there's 125,000 revoked FOID cards, and 70% of them, 70, have not turned in firearms. There's nothing being done about them. So my point is that in a serious world with sincere people, there is so much on our plate where we can do effective things to help our communities, but there's just a lot of non-serious people, and it does not help.
This is my fault because this has been such a great conversation. It's 1:15. We always like to get questions from the audience. I'm going to skip that today, and I'm sorry. I just respect everybody's time. And there's so much more to come. So as my usual question will you come back?
Oh, yes. And I'll bring my welcoming committee, too.
Yeah, great. We appreciate free speech.
They love me.
So apologies for, and maybe I can sum up some of, you mentioned the iPads. The last time you were here, you talked about an initiative, and someone who was in the audience ended up funding an initiative, right, where you've got these tablets.
Mm-hmm. It was a Crown Foundation. The they were awesome.
And that happened here because people like you were listening and actually engaging and sharing ideas and sharing resources. When you come back next time, what would be ideal? What if someone here used some of their school had some technology that their students just learned or their resources?
So we have, and I think we may have a picture of it. So we have this bus that we got, and it's kicking off in October 1st. And we take that to communities that either don't have libraries or their libraries are difficult to get to. And it's filled with books, and we've had donations, and we can use more of those. That's where also some educational-related things could be useful as well, because that will be in communities that have a little bit of a deficit in that area. So those are something that can be helpful. Our non-for-profit that we have always can use donations for light bulbs and things like that we do. We also have a unit that works with people in the community that have a range of issues, and we supply coats, shoes, baby formula and things like that. We do a lot of that. When I started doing this thing where I stayed connected to people when they left the jail to make sure they stayed on track, we also found that, like, within the community, there was other people that were needing things, and they were like, they weren't angry, but they were like, I haven't committed any criminal offense, but can I get some help? And it was like, yeah, you don't have to commit a crime to get my help. And so we have this unit that does a lot of interaction with people, particularly on housing and connecting people, particularly seniors, with housing. And so those areas I can use tons of help, too.
Okay.
And I can always use someone who's, like, dumb enough to come work for me, too.
There are a few in the room, I know. Yeah. One of my first jobs was working for you, actually.
I know. And, you're still scarred.
I should have just put that disclaimer out there. Tom's mom was my 7th grade teacher.
Yes,
I know. I worked for his he was a state rep when I was in 7th grade.
Those were all those brilliant bills, that little window of time where I was actually doing something constructive.
Right. Oh, gosh, no. You're doing so much now. I mean, this is incredible. Like, I think we certainly want to have you back. And
no, please,
I think there's obviously so much more to discuss, and it seems to be changing on a daily basis. But fortunately for all of us, you seem to be one step ahead of that.
We're trying hard, and I love what I'm doing because it lets me be creative.
Great. We appreciate it as a civic community. There's so much more to come. We've got some great programs coming up. Check out our website. And thank you. Thank you to
thank
the
you
sheriff.
So much.
Thank you to all your team. Great seeing you.
Thank you
for all the welcome.